It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the president called for an end to conversion therapy for young people last week. We'll find out what this means for the LGBT community.
First, our next guest tells the untold story of the history of cooperation behind one of Wisconsin's best-known environmental landmarks, the Aldo Leopold Memorial Reserve.
Stephen Laubach tells the story of the land before Leopold bought it and the complicated, sometimes contentious group management that's held it in stewardship over the years.
Stephen A. Laubach joins us now. He's the outreach specialist in the UW Arboretum Earth Partnership Program and the author of Living a Land Ethic. Stephen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Veronica.
Well, today the farmland and the shack that Otto Leopold bought is famous thanks to his articulation of what a land ethic means and, of course, his book, A Sand County Almanac. But what was this land like before Leopold bought it?
So the land that's now the Leopold Memorial Reserve had been inhabited for thousands of years. Ancestors of what are now the Ho-Chunk Nation members settled there soon after glaciation. More recently, I should say there are also artifacts nearby in Natural Bridge State Park, not far away, dating back to about 10,000 years. And there's a active hunter and gathering culture and farming there. More recently, settlers arrived in the area around the 1850s. And by the 1880s, Wisconsin actually in that area was approaching the maximum amount of cultivated land. So there was sheep farming, there was corn, oats, wheat, and hops. There was a hops craze there as well in the 1860s and 1870s before insect pest.
And I understand that the people who lived on this land, who farmed it before Leopold bought it, he would sometimes say they were moonshiners and leave it at that, but you actually found out there's a richer story there.
Yeah, that chapter was actually part of a paper I wrote for Bill Cronin's environmental history class at UW while I was in graduate school. And I looked at the plat records and the farm records in the State Historical Society and found the name of the farmer's name is Jacob Alexander and his wife's name was Emma. And it was actually a tragic Depression era story of someone who was not able to make a go on that land and had to move out to California. Appears that he couldn't get away from Wisconsin. He came back and died of a heart attack soon after. So when Leopold encountered it, there was a Dust Bowl era in Wisconsin as well, kind of a mini Dust Bowl, and it was blown over a corn stubble.
What do you think it is? As someone who spent a lot of time on this land, gotten to know the Leopold family, what is it about this land that makes it so special, both when Aldo Leopold was living and working on it and today?
When Leopold bought it, it actually wasn't for its spectacular views. He bought it because he saw potential for what is now called ecological restoration. He bought a kind of a forlorn piece of land and had a vision for restoring a landscape that had largely been destroyed even by the 1880s in Wisconsin. And so I think that's what makes it special, that story of renewal and restoration that gives hope to continuously gives hope to people in the conservation field like myself that land, even if you encounter it in a somewhat degraded form with some attention and care, can be returned to something special. And of course there are features there that I think are beautiful. There's the Wisconsin River just to the north of his shack. There's rolling glacial moraines on all sides, wetlands all around. So it isn't that it's forlorn and kind of ugly duckling. I think it is beautiful in its own right. It just may not be as spectacular as the Rocky Mountains.
Right now we're talking with Stephen Laubach. He's the author of Living a Land Ethic, taking a look at some of the cooperative conservation that surrounds the Aldo Leopold Memorial Reserve. And to catch us up on that angle, Stephen, in 1967, something kind of interesting happened. Five families joined together to take care of this land, you know, as a group, as a unit. How did that come about?
Yeah, so there were two main families involved in this, the Leopold family, obviously. But in the late 60s, actually, Aldo Leopold had passed away, and all of his children were kind of establishing their careers out of state. And so there was another family, the Coleman family. Aldo Leopold and Tom Coleman were hunting friends and close friends, and Tom Coleman owned Madison Kipp Corporation, or was the CEO of Madison Kipp, and his son Reed is now. And so the Coleman family actually, Reed Coleman by this time was in his 30s, kind of took the lead. He looked ahead, and the Interstate 90-94 had just come through there. Some lots just to the east of the shack along the Wisconsin River. It was getting subdivided into small 30-foot lots. They were getting sold. And he looked ahead, and it wasn't hard to imagine a time when, if someone didn't think about this, that the land all around there would look very different than it did in his childhood and in Leopold's time. So he came up with the idea of a cooperative agreement among the private landowners in the area who cared about Leopold's legacy. So he got the Leopold family to sign on, but there's also the family of Frank Terbilcox, who ended up being a land manager there afterwards, and two other families, the Van Hoosen and Anker families. The Coleman, Reed Coleman and his friends Howard Mead, who later went on to start Wisconsin Trails magazine, and Frank Terbilcox just went knocking on doors up and down, you know, for 3 or 4 miles along the Levee Road, what it's called. And they enlisted the support of these two additional families in addition to the Terbilcox and Leopold and Coleman families.
How unusual was this kind of model for conservation? This seems like an unusual sort of thing going on.
Yeah, it was definitely unusual. I think up to that time in the American conservation history, a more common approach would be to set aside land under, you know, state or federal jurisdiction. It wasn't unheard of, though. Leopold himself had started several cooperative ventures that I kind of allude to the note in the book. The Riley Game Cooperative was one where he set up a cooperative agreement among farmers and cities where the city members could use the farmers' land for hunting, and they would help with the finances and maintenance of some of the hedgerows and other areas to create better hunting habitat on the unused portions of the farm. So that was one example. There was the Fayville Grove Wildlife Area, also started by Leopold. So Leopold had kind of, he in his time in the Forest Service from the early 1900s through the mid-20s, had engaged in several activities with private landowners. So it was definitely not common, but there was some precedent there, and people were familiar with Leopold's legacy, were aware of that, and hoped to carry it on.
And eventually, nonprofits were born out of that original five-family group, the Sand County Foundation, the Aldo Leopold Foundation. What role do they play today?
Yeah, so the Sand County Foundation was the original foundation formed by the Coleman family in 1967 when the Leopold Reserve was formed. A little later, the Aldo Leopold's five children formed the Aldo Leopold Foundation in 1982. And they both have assumed, the Leopold Foundation started by primarily assuming management of the property that the Leopold family had originally owned within the Leopold Reserve, and also heading up, you know, if people wanted to come for tours and things like that after the Leopold Foundation was formed, and then a few years later, they ended up taking more responsibility there. But it's kind of been a dynamic relationship. Both have been involved in land management and ecological restoration there and outreach. And as the years have gone on, they've kind of expanded their vision either to other sites or bringing a national audience, national attention to how the Leopold Reserve is an example of a land ethic in action.
Now, with that many people involved, there must have been times when things didn't go so smoothly because people had competing interests. I know that one of the Leopold children wanted to donate the land to the university, and another wanted to focus on science there on the land and just bring scientists in, things like that. How did that work out when there were competing interests going on?
Yeah, so there are competing interests within the two families and their nonprofits, across the families. I think it would be extremely unusual if that weren't the case. And so in this case, they've been able to maintain that reserve legacy over a 45 to 50-year period, which is quite impressive. But yeah, there have been slightly different visions of conservation. The Sand County Foundation emphasizes more conservation on private lands. The Leopold Foundation, their focus has been on bringing kind of a national conversation about a land ethic and what it means to put a land ethic in action on that land. And so they've had to negotiate some differences in opinion within the family, too. Within the Leopold family, there were at one point they were thinking of donating it to the university, as you mentioned. But then the younger generation said, you know, we want this legacy to stay in the family. So there was example of dialogue across generations and you know, convincing the elders that it was worth it to keep in the family.
Stephen, thank you so much for coming on and sharing that history with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
We've been speaking with Stephen Laubach, the outreach specialist in the UW Arboretum Earth Partnership Program and the author of Living a Land Ethic.